Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by David Bradley. David is a 29-year veteran of the headhunting business. He's made 2,500 placements during his career. In 2019, he left Sphereon, later known as Randstad, to help start Movement. Movement has 5 brick-and-mortar offices across the United States. And for his part, David has been leading producer at Movement since they founded in 2009. He's made the most placements in the firm's history, which is 750 placements. His personal billings average $750 a year, including $1.1 million in 2022, $1.3 million in 2023. David is also a member of the Pinnacle Society. David, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Excited to be here. So we met at the Pinnacle Conference in Georgia, right?
Correct. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. That was a fun conference. And how long have you been with Pinnacle?
So Pinnacle is fairly new to me. I've been following Pinnacle for many years over the past decade or so, but I just got inspired last year to finally take the plunge and join, and had a lot of respect for the organization, and you know, wanted to stretch myself beyond our four walls and really learn and challenge myself. So yeah, it's been only a year. So
fantastic. Yeah, it's such an amazing group of people. I really enjoy my association with them, and love the people that I've met through that. And yeah, fantastic. And that was the way that I met you. So I know that you live in Michigan, but am I right that you actually grew up across the border in Ontario?
I did. We got something in common. I grew up in Canada, immigrated to the U.S. in roughly, early to mid-90s.
Okay.
So, So I've been Michigan native since 93, 94. So
okay.
This is home now.
And I know that you've been in recruiting for a long time. How did you originally get into the business?
Well, I literally stumbled into it, frankly. I was selling management training programs for a company back in the early 90s and struggling to make ends meet. And just, you know, we're putting all the effort and the work in, but it wasn't coming as naturally as I wanted it to. And so I was looking, I sought out the help of a recruiter to help find a job. And those tables got turned on me. And it's kind of a funny story. The person that got me in, he had a Rolex on, and he slid the Rolex across the table and said, if you don't make $50,000 in your first year, this Rolex is yours. Later, I found out it was not a real Rolex. It was actually a fake Rolex. But anyway, that's my story to get into the business. And there was no turning back once I got into it. I'm glad I stumbled into it. That's for sure.
Amazing. And what was it about? I mean, obviously, you've been doing it a long time. Was it love at first sight? Like, did you take to this naturally, or did you find it difficult at first? What was your trajectory?
Yeah, it was really pretty darn quick. So I was selling a product that was a $500 product we were selling, and it was, you know, a heck of a lot of work went into that, a lot of cold calling, a lot of appointment setting, and all of a sudden I was selling a $15,000 to $20,000 product, which is, you know, services of recruiting. And so all that effort and work was paved to get into something that was get into this business. And so there's literally no looking back. I think it took a couple months, maybe 3 months to. I remember doing 2 deals on the first day, and you know, and then, you know, year
on the
one
first
hit,
day,
or not first, excuse me, at the 3 month mark, excuse me.
Oh, okay.
3 month mark,
say,
two
wow,
deals
wow,
happened, and I'm like, gosh, you know, this is fantastic. So,
amazing.
Yeah. And then it was a pretty smooth the year two, I doubled my production, and then was with all the hard work and fortunate to stay at that level and above, and just kept rolling forward. So for sure.
What do you think it takes to be a top producer and get to that $1 million plus?
For sure. I think it's, the age old work hard. I mean, consistency. I think that, this business delivers a lot of highs and lows, right, along the way. So I think it's that that daily grind, that commitment. This is a 7-day a week business. Now, not to say I'm slaving over this business on the weekends, but I'm touching my business every day of the week. Clearly try to be the workhorse of the company and really try to set the pace. But I think that's really been whether you're on a vacation or you're not, you're touching your business. They say you leave this business for a week, it leaves you for two. And I believe that. So
I hadn't heard that expression, but it makes sense. So, how do you, okay. 'Cause so you're saying like it's work ethic, it's grind, It's you have to touch your business every day, being consistent over time. But you also have a large family, five kids. How do you manage? It's a, you know, it's a lot. So how do you pull all that off without burning out?
Yeah, I've got two at home still, but three are grown. But all those years of raising, I have a good wife who's been very, very helpful and taken a lot of that off my plate. So I'm fortunate there. But it's a balancing act. It really is. It's a when you're working, and there's no your nose is the grindstone. I mean, the distractions. I don't care what state you are in life. The distractions are going to hit your life. And personal or family. So it was really just a decision to be focused and be, and then, you know, and carve out time for the fun stuff. So that's one of the beautiful things of this business is the opportunities it gives you to coach my kids' hockey for many, many years and had opportunities to do lots of fun stuff. We travel with my daughter's volleyball team. We're all over the place with that. But it's picking spots, great vacations. But so I think it's a balancing act, honestly. And I think there is time for both. That's what's beautiful about the business. You take your business with you where you go. So
okay, fantastic. So like, I've heard this called life work integration rather than life work balance. It sounds like you're traveling with your daughter's volleyball or vacation in a beautiful spot, but you're still doing a little bit of work when you're out there. Is that right? Or
yeah, for sure. I mean, I chuckle at all the places I've closed deals, you know, and closed them at Walt Disney World in the restroom area or hockey arenas. I mean, all over the place, right? I'm sure most can relate to that. It's the business doesn't take a pause while we get out of the, you know, while we're out of pocket, right? So. So yeah, I'd say it's integration. It's staying really focused on you know, knowing that you've got a business to run.
And so like, what does grind and hard work and consistently look like for you in practical terms? Like, what does that mean in terms of effort, like number of hours, but also activity? I know you guys have like a 10-5-2 formula. I'm doing a research about movement. And so like, what is the pace that you think is required to perform at a really high level?
Yeah, for sure. Well, a 10-5-2, I'll just define it. And it, to me, it's kind of it's sort of a bare bones standard. It's sort of a watermark that we all need to be hitting. But 10 hours of phone time. So 10 hours of connect time with live candidates or clients each week, which is measured. We've got a, you know, our phone system measures that and delivers that to everyone each day. So you kind of, it's a little self-report card of how you're doing. And then, you know, five presentations per week. So five candidates being presented to a client and then two interviews a week. That's the benchmark. And I tell people come into the business that, you know, make that 12-8-4. I mean, make it that, and then you're going to, you know, you're getting in your biz dev and your trajectory is going to go that much stronger. But that's what 10-5-2 is. And I think respecting that and, so the right side of the ledger is all part of the left side of the ledger, right? So
that's the minimum standard. And so just so I'm clear on the terminology, so five presentations, that's your presenting a candidate to a client for a qualified job order?
Correct. That's right. That's right.
And then the interviews, those are first-time interviews?
First-level interviews. So okay. If interview goes to second stage, that doesn't count.
I understand.
Yep.
And by the way, just so I understand, are you guys retained or contingent or contained? What's the model?
We are both. So we offer a full range of services from retainer to contingency to a partial to upfront. You know, we're always looking to take some risk out of the process to get more involved, but we do both for sure.
Okay. Got it. So as in addition to the metrics, what else would you like characterize as a recruiter that is working at a pace that they could really be a top producer at Movement?
I think it's being real cognizant of your time. You know, we all have, I joke, there's 86,400 seconds in a day, right? And just being very aware of that. For me, it's a start time that's very consistent and being, having a routine, getting yourself in a daily routine of start times, end times. You know, if you're going to take a longer lunch, which I've fortunate enough to play hockey at lunch a couple of days a week and enjoy
the exercise. You still play hockey? Wow.
I do. Yeah. It's part of the fun part of what we do here, and whether there's a lot of activities going on here, but that's one of the things that I do. And it's being cognizant of that and making up for that time, whether it's staying later or getting in earlier or whatever you have to do to make up that time. But I think time management's a huge part of that.
You know, so everyone, I think everyone would agree to be productive, you have to be good at time management. But how? That's the question is, like, what's your system or your method for managing your time, David?
So, you know, we have systems. I use my Outlook. I use Outlook mm-hmm. religiously and block out time. But a lot of it's having a daily plan, knowing mm-hmm. the day before, what are the top 3 to 5 things that I need to do the next day? It could be mm-hmm. a key client interaction. It could be a new job order. It could be setting up a set of interviews. But having those activities well-defined the day before, so you're mm-hmm. Your mental state is going to work the day before to sort of really make a path for that. It's really that, I think, using those systems and tools, and then maximizing the when you're on the phone with candidates or clients, really being very organized and productive about how you go about a call. You know, getting 3 pieces of information on every call and being very focused on, you know, am I doing everything I can be doing right now? What's the best use of my time right now? And that's a great question. I think it's a Brian Tracy question that I always stuck with me. But
awesome. I'll circle back to the question because I think it's powerful. So the day plan, you obviously are crystallizing. What are the most important 3 to 5 things that I need to accomplish tomorrow? What else are you planning the day before?
Well, certainly all my money calls, and if there's any deals that are getting close to closing, or any searches that have to have a critical point, or we need to pull the client aside and really regroup on specific focus of the search. Are we missing the mark? Those kind of calls are really, I would say, critical. Those are the type of things that are prioritized in those 3 to 5 activities.
Okay, great. Now, define money calls in case people haven't heard that terminology before.
Sure. And anything that's going to close, anything that requires action to move a process forward. So it's going from first interview, second interview, to offer stage, to references, to closing, to staying in touch with the candidate. So those money pulse calls are absolutely paramount.
Got it. So it's all the calls to clients or candidates for your live jobs, work in progress, things that are in your pipeline.
Correct. Yep.
That could lead
Absolutely.
To money.
That's right.
Right.
For sure.
Okay. And do you block time then, David? Like certain times a day you do certain activities or?
Yeah, I'm not as structured as that. I mean, it's typically in the morning. It's getting the money calls out of the way first, and then mm-hmm. going to picking the top two or three assignments I'm trying to work on, and then marketing in the afternoon, getting to the 2 or 3 decision makers that I'm trying to get a hold of to either expand a current relationship or go to get a new client. So
it does sound like there's a structure. So the morning is recruiting, the afternoon is business development?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
That's right. Yep.
And you mentioned the 2 to 3. How did you arrive at that number, 2 to 3 decision makers per day that you want to speak to?
You know, I don't think that's necessarily we're making more attempts than that, but I would say to connect with three plus a day, and making 20 plus business development calls per week. So there's a list of 20 calls that are related to business development I'm making each week.
Got it. And is that conversations or is that attempts?
Those are conversations. Trying to have 20 meaningful conversations. Could be with current clients too to expand that footprint.
And by the way, I'm getting really granular, David, because I'm trying to like analyze what is David Bradley's secret here, because you seem like just a regular normal guy, and you're talking about like time management and working hard, but I mean, I won't say everybody, a lot of recruiters work hard, but they don't have the success that you've had. So that's why I'm trying to like figure out what is your secret sauce here. So that's why I'm asking such granular questions. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
So to get 20 conversations, how many attempts is that?
That's probably more in the neighborhood of 50 to 60 attempts per week to get 15 to 20 connections.
That's not a bad ratio, actually.
Not bad. Depend, you know, if you're honing in, you're sending LinkedIn messages out prior to, you're doing legwork prior to that to get to that fine list where you're setting calls.
I think that speaks to your experience and your industry context and everything. It's, you can get to the call quicker. If someone's starting a brand new desk from scratch, they're probably not going to connect one out of 2.5 times, right? One at
two or three times.
So,
for sure. so the list is a lot longer than that. These are you've already made a waves with these folks, and they wanting to hear from you, or they're coming back to you from a blast you've done, marketing blast for sure.
Okay, all right, fantastic. So apart from the and what about hours? This is a contentious issue, David, in that a lot of people our age, I'm guessing we're about the same age. I'm not really sure.
I think we're close.
I started in recruiting in 1997, and it was purely a telephone-based business. And it was, there was an expectation. You get in at work at 8, and then, you stay. It's not like a 9-to-5 job, right? Whereas, and some of the old fogies our sort of age complain about younger recruiters, different generation who that's not necessarily the way they want to work. What's your perspective on hours versus productivity? Because there is a correlation, but they're not directly connected.
You're absolutely right. I think it's staying open to new tools and understanding that candidates are talking to us differently now than they were 10, 15 years ago. So really integrating a strategy of texting, phoning, working with the candidate on their terms a little bit when you can connect with them and being open to the new rookies that are coming in that really show you a whole different way where, we might be looking at them and saying, hey, that's not how you do the business. And they come in and they kill it. And you're like, okay, there's something, I got to start paying attention to, to how they're doing it. So
that's awesome to have an open mind. Right. And you then benefit from that whole range, diverse viewpoints, I think is valuable. In our coaching program, I think the age ranges from 25 to 63 or something like that.
Sure.
And so just vastly different viewpoints and experiences. And, but then everyone learns from each other, which is really valuable.
Sure.
So working hard, managing your time, planning ahead, phone time. Oh, the other thing you said is maximize the value of every conversation. Make sure you're squeezing the juice and getting as much as you can. And you said 3 pieces of information. Could you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when you get someone on the phone, that's gold, right? When you're live belly to belly talking to someone. And so it's starting by recruiting that person, of course, trying to make sure, see if that person's a fit for the role you're working on, and then dovetailing into building enough of a relationship where you feel like you can ask them, hey, who do you know? Who do you know that could do this job? Not necessarily who do you know that's looking, but who do you know that could do this role? And really trying to paint the picture around their organization or where we can get, find qualified candidates. And then number 3, flipping into biz dev, looking at that call holistically as a business development opportunity. One of my favorite questions is, how's business? Tell me how business is. And generally speaking, you'll get a pretty good gut answer of how they're doing. Are they growing? Are they downsizing? And there's opportunities at each end of that equation. Mm. If the company is, they're growing, then the next natural question is, well, hey, could they be a client? And on the flip side, or is that plant going to shut down, or that operation going to shut down? Mm. So it's really being cognizant, really valuing that. I think too often our calls are, who could be a bird dog for us, where we build a super good relationship with that person, where we can call them back tomorrow and the next day and a month from now, and they'll be a wonderful source of, we can give them information on the market. They're going to be a wealth of information to provide great leads for us. So I think it's identifying those people and keeping those in a tickler file where you can go back to those folks time and time again and offer value, but also get value for sure.
Yes. Love it. So as you said, the objective, you have multiple objectives from every call. So you could recruit that person. They could become a client, or they could be a referral source. Yep. Right. But there is a real art to shifting gears between those different objectives during a single conversation, with it feeling natural, logical, authentic, and not awkward. What tips would you have for how you can shift gears from, let's say, you're recruiting somebody to getting referrals to finding out about, whether they're growing and whether you could help them to build their team?
For sure. Well, first note that that's not necessarily one call. It could be multiple calls, but I think that is the art of the business for sure. It's gently shifting gears, and it's how you ask and then reading the room. I mean, somebody you can read a conversation right at the get-go, and you're just not going to get anywhere with this. It's not going to work out. But I think just softball questions, of just painting a picture or asking for them to describe their if they're not looking, even try to build, hey, I'm not necessarily here to place you right now in this job, but let's build a relationship. You probably don't plan on retiring from where you are right now. So let's talk about your goal. What is your goal long term? Or what can I keep an eye out there for you? If you had your perfect job, what would it look like? And how could I help you in that endeavor, or refer you to someone that can? And so that sometimes will break down barriers for sure. And I don't necessarily, I'm very, on the asking for names, it's also very, it's not necessary. I don't want them to feel like, and I always say, I'm not going to, yeah, I don't use your name. It's not like I'm going to go and, it's obviously a confidential approach, but if they, oftentimes you'll get, I don't know anybody, or, you'll get the wall shut down on you pretty quick, but it's how you ask. And if asking for the opportunity to call you back, can I call you back on Friday? I know you've got some ideas, but you said you might have some names. Can I call you back? We have a secondary call to go through that, to have another round, right? For
Fantastic.
sure.
And then you gave the example of question, how's business? Do you have any other kind of key questions that just open up the conversation and give you a much broader insight into that person's world and what's going on for them?
I would say, I mean, in terms of marketing, in terms of clarifying or like opening up a business development conversation, you mean, or that kind of thing?
Either way, whatever, yeah, what just some of your go-to questions that you find help to move the conversation and get people to open up.
I've probably overused that how's business so many times because it's just so open-ended and it can go so many different directions. That's kind of my go-to, is asking it that simply, or hey, tell me about ABC company and what's happening with you guys, or if I've done some homework on that company, or I've heard them in the headlines, I may drop something there, or I hear this is happening, or I hear this is happening in the market. How's it affecting you guys, or that type of thing? Maybe open-ended, but
Yeah,
it's
fantastic.
consultative. It's a consultative ask as opposed to, I found your resume on a job board, or I found your resume on LinkedIn, or it's more consultative.
I agree. Consultative is definitely the way to go. So, what else can you point to as like a secret to your success, David, that because you've just been consistently successful over a very long period of time, and yeah, what other tips can you share?
Well, one thing I tell you, this is a foundation, that I have a very, very much deep gratitude for this business, and I believe we're in the greatest business in the world. I mean, this is just my only regret is I didn't get into it sooner. Believe it or not, I've been doing it for close to 30 years. So I think having that gratitude, understanding that we get to talk to people for a living and have just an incredible life, incredible income opportunity, incredible balance. We can manage our life any way we want it. We don't have to do all the things a lot of our client candidates have to do, travel and have stress and can lose their job. We're totally in charge of our life and have we create our own economy. And that's, to me, that's, I think that juice gets me flowing. Knowing that, and we've had these ups and downs and spikes and dips, and there's times when it's a little harder to do your push-ups every day when the market's changing, or you lost that big client, or I look outside, I see someone digging a ditch, and I'm like, that's hard work. What we do, we're very fortunate to do what we do. And I think that fuels getting up in the morning and saying, you know what, this is going to be another great day. It's going to be a great year. It's going to be a great month. Well, if it's not been a great month, next month's going to be great. So having that sort of mindset, I think, is really, and factor a lot of fun into the, I think whether it's vacations or I know with Movement, we've created a lot of awesome opportunities for fun. And I think created a culture where, you look forward to going to work every day. We look forward to coming to the office. It's not, it's that there's so many other peripheral things that make grinding out these darn cold calls at times a lot easier. So I think that's been instrumental for sure.
Fantastic. What's coming through loud and clear, which is no surprise to me, is that a huge ingredient, which is invisible but influential is mindset. You know, you said a few fun things there, like we can create our own economy, and like you've got this positive thinking of, you know, and sense of gratitude, I think as well, which is fantastic. Let's talk then about movement, because you brought it up in terms of like the environment, the culture, you know, making work fun. And so can you talk a little bit about the movement search culture and the mission?
Absolutely. I'll talk a little bit about just the we've been in business since 2009, 2010 is when we started, but yeah. We're a little unique. Well, very unique. I found that out a lot at Pinnacle, just how we operate, how we roll. A lot of our deals are split deals. Like 70% mm-hmm. of our business is splits between recruiter A and recruiter B. And that's no mystery. So we're, no borders, no boundaries. We're very much we develop relationship with the client on those tough to fill positions. And then it expands. We're not just in one niche. We're not just filling one type of functional area. We generally will get a tough search, and then the client will say, hey, can you do this as well? And next thing you know, it evolves into, or we want it to mushroom into a lot more. And so that's, a lot of our clients have kind of been founded that way. And so it's a unique structure that way for sure. We also, so the client-centric part of it, we're very client-centric. We're not, not that part of it. People, we call, you know, our website, if you look at our website, we talk about people power as well. And it all begins and ends with the people. I mean, that's at bottom line, that, you know, without every great hire we've had, it's just this model doesn't work. So it's a very team centered. There's a lot of collaboration on our business. You have to earn a seat at the table here. It's not something that's granted, but it's very much it's not a micromanaging environment. It's not like going to work at some of the bigger, let's say top 10 contingency recruiting firms. But we do closely look at our KPIs. I mean, everyone's mm-hmm. KPIs are measured. We hold our group accountable, right? Well, when the right side of the ledger is taken care of and folks are hitting their goals, the left side to us doesn't matter. And how they hit them is kind of up to them. But until they get to the what they need to do, it's very heavily focused on, how many interviews are we getting, how many calls we're making, how many emails we're sending. And it's, again, not a stick, but it's more of a carrot of, hey, this is the self-evaluation that gets looked at. I think I'm answering part of the question here, but so the people power part of it, we're yep. very transparent. Everybody knows in the firm what everyone's making. It's not like a mystery. Comp plans are very standardized. So, as reports come out at the end of the month in our meetings, it's, everyone knows with the deal, and it's not, there's no special deals for, so really that transparency, I think, builds trust and builds, we're very much an organic play. All of our growth has happened really by hiring one great person at a time, and that will continue. That's even our mission statement, right, is to build this business around folks that want to and dedicate their lives to this business. So it's, for sure.
Fantastic. You've mentioned a few things there I wanted to pick up on, David. So I totally get the people power. You 100%. If you hire the right people, then amazing things happen, right? If you hire the wrong people, then everything gets harder. So like getting those unique, special, talented individuals on board just, it becomes infectious, and it just almost becomes a virtuous cycle where you attract more great people as well. Totally get that. Now, I just want to understand, you said like you don't have you don't as a firm focus on one niche, but do individuals specialize as far as industries or functions or like, because I can't imagine that you've got 60 people all doing a bit of everything.
Yeah, it's a great, great question. So we tend to, we bring new people in, they build different niches. So we're working on several different industries, several different spaces. I would say the core is probably engineering, manufacturing, mm-hmm. Control, financial, controlling, purchasing, all those activities. But we tend to, within the firm, have little pods that are working maybe aerospace, and some folks are working packaging. Some folks might be working automotive. Defense. So all these different, they tend to evolve, and but there's no, we're very, again, no borders, no boundaries. We're not one to tell folks you can't, you know, you can't go over this boundary or that border. You know, it's very entrepreneurial from that standpoint. So people do evolve and specialize, but it's kind of on their terms. And
got it. So they would just develop their own specialism. And how do the splits factor in? Is that because people are doing it? Like, is it 360 desks, or is it a split desk model?
Yeah, great question. So we start out by bringing, you know, there's different levels you can be brought in. A lot of our college recruiting and our are getting brought in as a headhunter support specialist. They're getting brought in as everyone's a W-2 employee. All of our 65 folks are 60 are full desk, not full desk, excuse me, but 65 recruiters. Only two are non-billing. So everyone bills. Everyone's doing push-ups every day, you know, working the business.
Okay.
So, back to your question, the headhunter support specialist model, those folks will come in on a base salary and then get trued up on commissions. They're going to make what a regular recruiter would make at the end of a month or a quarter, but they're paid to learn the business the proper way to make, you know, as opposed to worrying about being on a straight commission or a commission against a draw. They're really focused on how do I build strength and build that recruiting muscle. Yeah. And then we flip them to promote them once they can develop a couple clients. And once they can prove that they can bring in two clients, and then next thing you know, they get promoted up, and good things happen from there. So everyone's timetable is different for that. Some folks, it may be a year or two before they get to that next step. Some it's, 3 to 6 months in, they're chomping at the bit to write business. And so that's that model. That's that group. And then, you know, when we're bringing salespeople in, they're going to, a lot of times, if they have no recruiting experience, they're going to come up that ladder sometimes quicker. Not always, but, and then experienced recruiters will come in full desk from day one and you know, build their business. So,
all right. That makes sense.
I think that's what kind of, that's why the split play so much, for sure.
Well, could you elaborate? Why do you think there's so many splits?
I think there's a lot. Because of the headhunter support group coming up, those folks are looking for stuff to work. They're at the ready of all of our team, anyone who are working full desk. So we're generally clamoring for support. We've got a lot of jobs. We're finding things are coming back in a nice way this year. And so it ebbs and flows. But and as those headhunter support folks move up into full desk, you know, they have their own business. And now we got to backfill that group. So I think it's sort of our model, a lot of collaboration.
Yeah,
our recruiters get to know each other. We're not just virtual faces on screens, folks are in offices for the most part, mostly. We're collaborating. We get to know each other. We're, you know, whether it's the annual incentives or trips or meetings, we're on face meetings every week, a couple times a week. So there's a high level of engagement, and we can't really fill all our jobs on our own. We need the support.
That makes a lot of sense. So then when it comes to KPIs, I share the philosophy with you, David. I think as a self-evaluation tool, it's so important to know, like, what are the steps? Like, break it down. What are the steps I need to follow in order to get the outcome, you know, that I want? And what's the recipe I need to follow? And knowing what my own individual ratios are, I can look for opportunities to tweak and improve in order to get, you know, my billings up, right? So I think if without that, you're really flying blind. But at the same time, you don't want your manager standing over you saying, why haven't you made 50 calls today or whatever, right? That's pretty, you know, soul destroying. So how do you strike that balance at Movement?
Well, it's really a self-report card. I mean, for the most part, we do our meetings every week, and we call out our top activity every week, right? Yeah. So in front of the whole group, so everyone gets a chance to be in the limelight of good activity. And then we look at each person knows where they stand. I mean, did you have any interviews last week? What was your phone time? What was your presentations? What did that look like? How many, was your desk level, was it anemic last week, or was it productive? So I think there's a natural, no one wants to be, we're a very competitive group, and folks want to be, just naturally want to do well and want to be successful. Yeah. So I think that sort of feeds that, but it's not, like I said earlier, it's not a stick or saying, hey, you know, we're not looking over people's shoulders, and unless there's a bigger problem that exists, have we lost someone's heart and soul, which is not usually the case. It's just maybe folks will hit a slump, or there'll be different things, but it's very, this is an activity driven business, right? Yeah. So I think that those KPIs, and it's really worked in our, so as an example of 2022, our, PDA was $30,500 for a group our size, and so close to 1.2 units. We were down a little bit in 2023 off our, we were about 20% down, but we very much measure, and we set our goals as a company based on that PDA. What is everyone going to do per month by through their goal setting, and it delivers our annual targets and what we're going to hit for sure.
So wait a second. Let me just rewind here. So your per desk average in 2022 was per month was 38.5.
It was 30,500 was our per desk average.
30,500. So that's fantastic.
We had a great year. 2022, we knocked the ball off out of the park.
That's 366 per year.
Right. Yeah. It was a really, really good year. We boomerang out of COVID. We just shot out of a cannon, really.
Yeah.
We were very bullish. We knew the world was going to come back, and we, rather than retrench and pull back, we went full throttle and used it as an opportunity to hire and find great people who are just, again, dedicated to this business, who are going to be in this business post-COVID. And so it really shot us out of a cannon. We were down a bit last year, we're kind of going through the same push this year, as realizing that there's an opportunity. And so hopefully we'll have another 2022 next year or this year.
Adjustments have you guys made in response to us having a down year? I know it still was a great year, but compared to 2022, 2023 was slightly down. What did you change in order to make sure that 2024 is another fantastic year?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm not sure I have, I could bottle up the answer, but I think it really boils down to the left side of the ledger and the activity. And I think as the more success you have, there's a tendency to take the foot off the pedal, or some of that success might come via the economy or the market or that client's hiring like crazy, and like the business came easy, right? So when things change and all of a sudden it gets tougher, I think if you have the same level of activity, it's not going to yield the same results. So usually you find that out in the rearview mirror, right? You find that out 3 months down the road, and oh my gosh, I'm not billing what I did last year. And so it's coming back, and it really comes down to the basics and executing on those basics on a daily basis.
Makes sense. Yep, absolutely. Are there any other, like, if you think of the growth of movement, because there's not many, I think you guys have hit greater than 20 million in billings. Is that right?
We've had a couple 20... years at that level. Last year was not, because we dipped, but it's been a steadily, steady, slow and steady climb over the past several years, and
because that is amazing. Like, there's not many recruiting firms that get above eight figures in direct hire permanent fees. What do you think are the keys to the growth that you guys have had?
I think number one is the again, I go back to the people. This is a family. Movement's a family. It's just a fabulous group of people, and feeding and caring for those people. I think, anybody who can do the business and has the chops to do this business stays with Movement. They just, we feel we're the closest thing to an ESOP in the sense of just the give backs, and the commission rates are at a level where it's very, very competitive. And if you look across the border, and we don't cut corners on annual incentive trips. And I credit leadership with Doug and Chris and the whole group for a lot of different things, but certainly the structure of that, how important that is. It's just so important, these annual trips, and everyone has a chance to make it. And we've done 14 of these destinations from day one. Systematically, you have to qualify, you have to hit a certain production goal, and usually about 30-40% of our group will be off to a fantastic destination each fall. So that type of thing, we're very there's a lot of fun activity. We do, our annual meetings are an absolute big deal. I mean, we bring everyone in, fly the whole company into, usually it's a Detroit area destination. We've done other destinations too, other offices in Charleston, but it's very, very meaningful. And it's such a essential part of the culture, and it's built relationships that are just very strong. And the spouses know each other. They're coming on these trips too. So at the localized office level, whether it's cornhole tournaments or CrossFit going on downstairs right now, probably We've got, you know, chili cook-offs, and there's that stuff sprinkled out throughout the year. Wednesday breakfast. I mean, just that those types of things are just very important to culture. So
I agree 100%. Can we explore that a little more? So it sounds like it's a really like you're designing a culture that is geared to high performance. And so there's generous commission scheme, but there's also a huge like social and kind of incentive aspect to it. What is the annual incentive trip? How does that work?
You have to hit a goal by usually it's by the end of July. So it's January to July. You hit that goal, you get to go to an awesome destination. All company paid. And then there's another, we have a whole other level for those folks that are at what we call our upper echelon group. So those folks get, there's a little bit of an extra incentive for those folks to have an extra couple days, but very structured, very meaningful. You know, these are 5-star trips, outside planner. I mean, it's just, it's really, really well done. You hit the goal. If you don't hit it, you don't get to go. So it's an all or nothing. And there's different levels of what you have to hit for, you know, for newbies coming in without the experience versus experienced recruiters, for sure.
That makes sense. So is it based on their performance against their individual goal? Therefore, you know, even a less experienced person could still come to the trip.
Yeah, it's a number. It's a number. So if we literally are sending 65 people to the trip, that's what's happening. Yeah, I've had previous environments where that wasn't the case. You know, they take the top 10%. It's a very understandable goal to everyone.
Yeah,
everyone has a chance to make the incentive.
Great.
So that makes it even, you know, more meaningful. Everyone has a shot.
What's a recent trip that stands out to you?
Oh, we just got back from Palm Springs, California. Nice. We're out there. We've been to Aruba. We've been to South Beach. We've been on a cruise to Bahamas. We were at we did a cattle ranch drive in Tucson. We've just to name a few, but we're going to be going to Mexico this fall in October. So these are a lot of fun.
And
for sure.
What are some of the other traditions? Because when we talk about culture, there's different elements that make up culture. One is the values of the business. One is, another thing is the traditions. So the annual incentive trip is something you've done 14 times. What are some of the other traditions that and just regular activities that form part of the sort of fabric of the company that everyone's familiar with?
Yeah, I mean, we run in a very, you can almost set a watch to how we collect, how do we run the business. I mean, it's very, very systematic. And these things are, you know, very, the annual trip, people know what it is, what the criteria is. It's all laid out. It's very transparent. Of course, all the I mentioned the monthly social activities, but also like our profit sharing plan. There's a 5% profit sharing opportunity on top of the generous commission rate, and we've done it almost every year. I think one year we missed it by a bit; some of our metrics were off. But that is something every spring. And folks have had that put into their 401k, and so there's those types of things. We've just implemented a maternity and paternity leave program. We've done we had a loyalty bonus program where back to the stick factoring. You know, folks want to do this business; they want to do it. They're going to be in it for the long haul. We want them with us. We want them.
Yes.
There's an opportunity to give back as much as we can and make it work for everybody. So
fantastic.
It's been a good
that
formula.
Sounds amazing. I think one of the things that you mentioned in our correspondence when we were preparing for this, David, was that each of the owners has a different role in the driving the success of the business. So could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're all started the company together. Doug is our fearless leader and he's our think tank in a lot of the systems. And so everything we see that's following suit and, you know, leading the business, that's a lot of his foundation. And so thankful for that for sure. And then Chris is kind of he still works a desk and bills and Doug does to some extent, you know, a deal or two a year, but Chris is kind of our more on the people side. People roll up to him. He's overseeing the people side of the business, and he's working a desk. So all folks at some levels, and then each office has a leader too. So there's it's decentralized that way. And then my role's been to be the workhorse, to be the example, to be that. And that's very, very meaningful throughout the firm's history. And then all three of us are very, very tasked with finding great people and building mm-hmm. Putting the building blocks together from that standpoint, for sure. And then our history was also in that realm as well. I mean, Doug had run offices before and had a lot of that experience, and so it was a lot of input into the marketing and how we were going to put things together. And then Chris's background, and he was a teacher, a former teacher, a lot of leadership there. And then he grew up in the business. We all grew up in the business together prior to getting things rolling. So.
So you'd worked together previously?
We all have our lanes we run in, and you really have a good trust that things are getting handled outside of that lane, for sure.
It's awesome to have complementary skills and share the responsibility. You mentioned something I wanted to circle back to, was you all share responsibility for recruiting your own staff or movement. How do you do that? Because we have two coaching programs, David. I'm not sure how much I told you when we met up, but so we have a coaching group for the solopreneurs and kind of small boutique firms, and then we have one for the aspiring entrepreneurs who really want to build something like you guys have. And one of the big challenges is internal recruiting. How do we get the best people to come and want to work for us? So you guys have around 60 people, so you've obviously got a formula that works. What's been the most successful method of building your own teams?
Yeah, you bet. So, I mean, I think the first, we're now, the position we're in today is a much different position than we were in, 14 years ago. But at the beginning, it was kind of attracting people we knew and in the business who were already doing the business. And then it really, the major growth over the past 10 years has been taking people who've had no recruiting experience. They're winners in other areas of life. And whether they're a restaurant, in the restaurant business, or they're in the advertising business, or they're, training business, or they're, whatever they've done, they have the drive, the passion, they've got that sort of that work ethic. We've got all the ingredients. And we've taken those folks and brought them in and then done our best to teach them the business. So finding those people, and we've had a lot of our group responsible. They've been helping to bring people in too. So it takes a village to do that. So that's been probably the core. And now we're at the point now where we're realizing a lot of firms don't take care of their people. It's certainly the bigger firms. We're seeing a lot of turnover. We're seeing a lot of, loss of control of offices and people. So we're using it as an opportunity to grow again, but now taking swings at really strong folks in the business and opening offices around them and stuff like that. So that's been exciting. But it's,
oh, that's cool.
I think so it's having all eyes in the business. Yeah.
It sounds like, so you're doing a combination of growing your own talent. You're taking people who are, have the right top performer mindset, and then teaching them the business.
Yep.
You're also, doing what you do for clients and headhunting excellent people who you know of in the market. And they both have sort of pros and cons. But when you're looking at someone who's never done recruiting, it's a bit of a gamble, right? Because on the one hand, they're very malleable. They've if you hire the right person, they've got that drive. But this isn't for everyone, right? And if you haven't actually done it, then it's hard to be certain that this is going to work out. So how do you spot or recognize the ones you think have the best chance of success?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wish I had the perfect answer and bottle up, I could sell it for a lot. But we tapped into the local community strong here in Clarkston, okay. Michigan. So we've got tapped into schools and that we just know families, we know people that have that there's good roots there, right? And so that's been a big asset. So just looking for folks that have the right value system. They know they're built around hard work. They're going to appreciate this business, and they're coachable. I've got this. Or so that's been an enormous part of it is those types of that. And you miss sometimes too. It's not like we have a perfect formula, but that's been a massive, I'd love to find people that have failed along the way. They've done something, they've persevered, they've fought through something, they've had adversity. Anybody who's had it too smooth a sailing all the way through, there's always a red flag.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So then what sort of questions are you asking to you know, to probe on that, how they, what adversity they faced and how they responded to it.
So we'll bring that person in. We'll carve through that resume like you wouldn't believe. Like we'll go into lead through every little thing and from where they went to school, why did they choose that school, why did they choose this career, what other opportunities are they looking at besides our opportunity at Movement?
Yeah.
Why are they interested in our business? I mean, it's very, very in depth, and it's not just one set of eyes on it. It's there's always a several interviews. It's not just one. It's really diving into the whole. Do they really, really know what they're getting into? And we'd almost rather scare them away a little bit and send them away. You go think about this, or go talk to other firms and make then come back to us when you're really serious. You want to do this, so it's worked for the most part. And then even the folks that don't, you know, there's some that, you know, you're into this business a year or two or three, and they realize that this third party headhunting thing is just, it's a different animal. It's not what they thought it was, or they can't, you know, great people, fantastic people. We've sent many of those to our clients, and they've been rock stars with our clients. And, that's maybe their calling. Right. And they've born many of in-person recruiter interest and talent acquisition who've literally knocked the ball out of the park in that.
All right. That's cool. Fantastic. And so like, what are your plans for growth, David, moving forward?
Yeah. I wish I could say there's a master strategy, and it's really so organic and so one at a time. There's no master. So it's as of late, the last 6 months or so, we also don't have a mission like, hey, we want to be in this market. We're looking to open up an office in, you know, sunny California or whatever. It's more about hiring. We have a great person in Florida. We have a great person here, and we're going to, you know, that person's demonstrated interest and in aptitude to build an office or, and so that's sort of evolved. But it's really, again, the mission statement, right? Build this business one person at a time with folks who have dedicated themselves to this business. So we're having some fun right now. We're opening up a couple offices as we speak in 2024 that will kind of evolve. But so I wish it was more scientific.
Well, listen, maybe I can help you with that, because I'm a big believer that you absolutely need to have that vision of like crystallizing where you guys are headed, A, for the owners to be able to create the strategy to make that happen. But then also you can then sell that to the team internally about, look, this is the journey we're going on together, and this is what's in it for you. But then in terms of recruiting people to the business as well, if you have that really clear vision that they can buy into, then that's going to get them to join you versus the other recruiting firm down the road. But having said that, you obviously have a compelling story already. Why do you think, like, why should either experienced recruiters or people looking to get into the recruiting business join Movement?
Yeah, well, I think it comes down again to the, the things I've mentioned as far as the, there's the hard things like the competition and all the things that are just, you can measure and look at, and we sleep very well at night, knowing what the gig is here. And so that's very meaningful. We're very focused on that, and we've implemented things along the way when someone joins us, we want them here forever. That's absolutely the mission. And so what can we do to make that a reality? Mm. So I mean, that's like I mentioned, all of the culture stuff, the trips, the profit sharing plans, all of that. And we're very focused on building, and we have folks working remotely as well. And this folks have typically evolved into that. It's not where the core of our group is in a brick and mortar offices in Charleston, and two in Detroit area, and then one in Grand Rapids, with Traverse City. We have one in there now as well. And so, and then Florida's probably the next, maybe Cleveland. So there are a lot of other markets that are going to start opening up for
Fantastic.
Sure. Back to your growth question, it's really not out of ambition. It's more out of necessity. And I think people tend to like, oh, we liked it what it was 5 years ago when there was a, you know, smaller group of people. Mm-hmm. People like this, not change, but it's grown out of necessity. As we bring new people on, they need support for their desk. And it gives management opportunities for people for those that want that.
Success breeds success. So, you know, you're kind of in a virtuous cycle now, right? Where business is going well, and that forces you to grow because then you need to meet the demand of your clients. You need to support your recruiters. So that's a positive sign, David. David, just out of curiosity, what is with the squirrel behind you there on the wall?
Yo, that's a fun artwork, Mark. That's basically the tough to find candidate. That's the candidate that, you know, almost doesn't exist, but we can find them. So that's kind of some fun with that. And then you can't see it over here, the headhunter. We've got a mural of what a headhunter looks like, and it's kind of a caveman. It's fun, right? But that's what that is. And I didn't get it. So yeah, that's the purple squirrel. That is purple squirrel.
Fantastic. So, tell me about the office then, because it sounds like you're trying to create a fun environment that, you know, it's not, you know, corporate, you know, too serious.
Exactly. And that's been, you know, very, very important to the company. So each of our office, this office here in Clarkston is a building that was owned by Henry Ford back in the wartime, and they built parts for the war out of this building. So it's an amazing building. It's an historic downtown Clarkston. We've got a stream that runs right underneath the building, which is really people love to come into the office. It's a great place to come, and restaurants right around the corner. And so all of our offices are kind of strategically put in a downtown in Royal Oak, we're next to a music theater. In Grand Rapids, we're right in the heart of downtown. Charleston, we're right in the heart of Charleston. So we don't scrimp on that. That's very, very important. Again, it builds the culture, right? It gets people collaborating. We want people in the office. We want people talking. So that's fun. Yeah, you'll have to come out and have a tour of it sometime, Mark.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'll take you up on that.
Mark, one of the things too is that, you know, I think attributing to success has been the being a constant student of this business. You're always learning, right? You never reach a plateau where you learn everything. I can tell you that this podcast, I know many of the people personally now from Pinnacle, but I can't tell you the value that this podcast has had with me personally, and then with our firm. People listen to this stuff, and if you can pick a tip or two out of each one and integrate it, you know, you can create a lot. So I just thank you for this, the opportunity to be on this today, and then also to for this to be have gone on for as long as it has and learn. It's been great.
Thank you so much for that wonderful feedback, David. That means a lot to me, and I'm constantly amazed at how much people enjoy this podcast, because I would do it, even if no one was listening, I would do it for the opportunity to learn from David Bradley and have these really interesting conversations with successful people. But as it happens, there must be a lot of people who think like me and also want to, you know, learn and grow and develop. And so it's attracted quite a following, which blows me away. I feel really grateful. Sure. Listen, congratulations on what you've built. It's truly remarkable. And I loved hearing your story.
Fantastic. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, David. That was fun. Let's talk again soon. Take care.
Okay, you bet. Thank you.